You are listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we are marching toward another Boston Pops spring season. That is, of course, the Imperial March by John Williams. Boston Pops playing it in 2021. Now, Keith Lockhart is certainly more Anakin Skywalker or Obi-Wan Kenobi than Darth Vader, and he is here to tell us what's in store for the Pops this 2024 spring from Symphony Hall this Friday to Tanglewood in June. Maestro Keith Lockhart, welcome back to Radio
thanks.
Boston.
Thanks. It's great to be here. And thanks for, I like to think of myself as early Anakin, you know, before he went to the dark side.
Well, but, don't forget that he, well, spoiler alert, folks,
oh, that's,
if you haven't seen it.
If you haven't seen the end, yeah, he gets good at, again.
He comes back around.
You're right.
Exactly. But I threw in an Obi-Wan for you, too, there. So Spring Pops runs from May 10th to June 8th. And I have to tell you, I've looked at the program. It looks like you had particular fun putting this one together.
You know, each of these years, this is 29 of them we've put together now, and each one of them is special and different, but they really have gotten more varied over the years, which I think is kind of fulfilling the function of the Pops, which is to play for as many different potential audiences as we can. And I'm really happy with how this one has come out, though I do look at it and go, how am I going to do all that in the next 5 weeks?
How are you going to do all of that in the next 5 weeks?
A lot of coffee. Some naps and a lot of sitting at a desk with scores trying to figure them out.
All right. So we're going to go back and forth kind of with what's in the program and then all kinds of questions that I have for you. And since you said a lot of coffee, we're going to do a quick lightning round on that. We ask many of our guests, hot or iced?
Hot or roast?
Hot or iced?
Hot, oh, definitely hot.
Thank you very much.
Iced coffee tastes to me like cold coffee that I accidentally picked up the wrong cup from yesterday.
Okay, yeah. You get to keep your status as Anakin or Obi-Wan. You were about to go Darth Vader in my books, but that's okay. So listen, let's look at what's coming up first this weekend, and I'm going to play a little bit of sound here. So most people think of him as a singer, but this is Harry Connick Jr. playing a piano solo with John Williams and the Boston Pops at Symphony Hall in May of 2001.
Wow.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But
that's,
you've got him coming back.
We do. It's the first time I've worked with Harry before, but not in Symphony Hall. So I'm looking forward to seeing him again. He's an iconic American musician. And you're right. People think of him as a singer, especially this year, I think, is an anniversary year of when Harry met Sally, which is when everybody started to know who he was.
He won a Grammy.
But he is an incredibly talented musician and one of the best popular pianists of all time, I think.
Yeah. When you put together a program, you said, Keith, that you want to draw all kinds of audiences. Do you sort of sit down and say, okay, here are all the members of our community, and how do I match up? Or do you sit down and say, here are all the kinds of music I'm dreaming of doing this year? Is there anyone I'm leaving out? How do you think about that?
Well, I think it's all of the above. I think in the last few years, I think many arts organizations, ours included, have thought more about the communities we serve and how to best be a resource for the entire community. And, you know, the temptation, I think, in any of these things is to sell to the people you know you can sell to. And that has worked for a long time with the Boston Symphony and the Boston Pops. But I think if you look at all of the programming initiatives and things that are coming out of Symphony Hall these days, it's a lot more about inclusivity and just making people realize that this is a great public institution that was founded to serve everyone.
When you first got here 29 years ago, you talked about in an interview about the fact that, you know, part of the bread and butter of the Pops was selling chunks of 50 tickets to large groups from New Hampshire, right? Mm-hmm. Who would come down as an example.
It is so true. At that point, that's the biggest change that we've had. And this is, you know, this is also a marketing challenge because we do have to stay in business and we have to continue to be, you know, at least the most popular music arm of a very august institution. But we did something in the range of 65% of our sales when I came were group sales. And a lot of that was the Rotary Club of Sandown, New Hampshire. And those aren't where people gravitate these days. That's not where people come from.
Yeah. Although Rotary Club of Sandown, New Hampshire, if you're listening, you are still invited.
We're totally welcome, but they have not reached out in a decade now. So,
all right. So you said, you know, you need to be a popular arm of an august institution, and that's going to get us to this.
Just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's
So this is a singer who sounds like Freddie Mercury. Yeah,
totally. Everybody just thinks that's Queen.
Right. But it's not.
No, that is Marc Martel, who was the voice of Freddie Mercury in the acclaimed biopic Bohemian Rhapsody.
When Rami Malek wasn't singing
exactly.
himself. That's right.
And it's uncanny how good he is at this role. Again, a very talented musician, great at the keyboard, really, really great with the audience. And it's hard to not, you close your eyes and it could very well be Freddie Mercury. So it's a great way to pay tribute to, I think, one of the most creative rock bands of our time.
And of course, now for people who have seen the biopic, they know that one of the things that Queen did was wanting to pull from all different kinds of genres with Bohemian Rhapsody. They wanted to do an opera.
Right. And that's why his music is so popular, I think, with me and my very first rock album, by the way, the first one my parents let me buy. It was all classical stuff before that. But the first one they let me buy was Night at the Opera.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And that dates me right there. And was on a LP. Do you remember those?
Yeah. Oh, I do. No, I remember when this song came out, mm-hmm. right? And my older brother Bill had the album, right? And there was always a fight in our house between who would get to play. You have Cool in the Gang music coming up in Tanglewood over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And my older sisters wanted Cool in the Gang, and my brother wanted things like Queen, right? And it was who got to the turntable first that day, right? What would be on in the house?
You should solve that. I got my parents to get me a turntable, just the integrated one-piece thing in my room, and I got to put all my 45s on there, too.
Yeah.
But that, now we're really dating ourselves.
Okay, so is this a secret thing about you that while you are one of the most prestigious conductors, I think, you know, arguably in the world, that there's a rock and roll guy in there?
Well, I don't know if it's a secret or if it's kind of what made me particularly gravitate toward and fit this particular job is, I think I've always had, I didn't grow up in a particularly musical household, so I always had a really wide-ranging list of the things I loved, and I didn't think, well, this isn't serious enough to warrant my attention. So I loved jazz, I loved musical theater, I loved rock and roll, and those things all for this job make it the perfect combination. But of course, I still love growing as a musician and doing the great music that was created specifically for orchestra to begin with.
If you could have secretly been in any rock band you wanted, what would it have been?
Wow. Zeppelin.
No way.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
All right. I probably wouldn't be alive anymore, but you know.
All right. Keith Lockhart would have been in Led Zeppelin. All right. Now, this is jazz. Marquise saw where I was going. This is Jesus Molina performing a cover of Night in Tunisia. My son's a jazz musician. It's one of my son's all-time favorites. Dizzy Gillespie originally. This is sound from his YouTube channel in 2021, because you're doing some jazz.
This guy
is... Oh, Marquise, leave this going in the background.
This guy is incredible.
Yeah.
Listen to the fluidity of that technique. We're doing or continuing a season that we actually started, a series that we started during the pandemic, during our virtual year, called The Roots of Jazz, where we're trying to take deeper dives. I mean, we've always played jazz, but it's always like, and here's a little Glenn Miller, here's a Duke Ellington song. Start looking at how this, the art form that could be thought of as the only uniquely American invention in music, came to be. And the influences of diverse communities, especially the Black American community, in creating these new sounds, these new rhythms that now have been accepted and loved by the entire world. So we're continuing with Branford Marsalis, Wynton Marsalis's brother and an amazing saxophonist, paying tribute to the seminal saxophonists, the people on that particular instrument, what they contributed with a new piece that has a movement each for four of the great saxophonists in jazz history, and presenting kind of as a special cameo, Jesus Molina, who is a young Colombian jazz pianist with a huge online following, whom I have just fallen in love with.
Had you ever played with Jesus Molina before or seen him live? Is
no.
this your first time?
The first time I saw him was when my staff sent me YouTube links and said, look at this.
Now, when the Pops players get to play with some of these new up-and-coming artists, of course, they're incredibly seasoned musicians themselves. But, you know, how does it affect them? Does it make them want to try new things? Is it, been here, done that, but not in a disrespectful way? Does it spark some kind of new magic? How does that affect musicians who play and have played everything, right?
Well, of course you can't speak for everybody as one, because there's 80 musicians that's on stage, therefore there are 90 opinions. But I have to say, especially in the BSO and the Boston Pops of today, there's a huge openness to talent and exciting new influences. And I've had the wonderful, for instance, when we had Rhiannon Giddens on a couple of years ago, just watching people's faces light up. They used to do that only when there was a great classical violinist playing a solo in front of us. But now you get people from all sorts of genres, and people are looking and going, wow, that person's extraordinarily talented. And that enriches what we get to do. And it goes to show that classical music, I think, is less out on an island than it has ever been in our history.
So we're going to do now a couple things that you're going to do both here and at Tanglewood. And I think these songs may be familiar. Let's start with this one. And I glow because I know what my worth is. This song is called Surface Pressure. It's from Encanto, live at the Hollywood Bowl in 2023. The sound is from Disney on YouTube. And then many will know this one as well. John Williams again. This is conducting Jurassic Park back in 1993 with the Boston Pops. And okay, here's my confession to you, Keith Lockhart. I have not yet seen the Pops play a soundtrack to a film as it plays.
This could be the first one.
I really, really want to do this. This is so cool.
A great story about Jurassic Park specifically. It came out in 1993.
Oh, I remember.
And John, of course, was, since he always had first crack at his own music, he premiered some of these pieces in the concert hall with the Boston Pops. But in 1993, in June of that year, toward the end of the season, there was this young guest conductor invited in whom there was some interest in taking over the job at the Boston Pops. It was me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned out I was there on a weekend that John had paid for and scheduled, because he's a wonderfully generous human being, a showing of Jurassic Park for the orchestra. So I was sitting in the non-existent Cleveland Circle cinema with these people I didn't even know on my day off after starting these concert series with him, watching this piece going, you know, not only was the score incredible, but, at that point we were so unused to good CGI that we're like, how did they do this?
I know. I don't think people can understand what it was like to see that first dinosaur on the screen.
I don't think my kids can,
real,
certainly.
Right?
I think that's one of the things. They see these things, they take it for granted now.
Yeah, it's really incredible. I mean, when those dinosaurs showed up on the screen, it was real in a way that was really unlike anything
else. This was not claymation anymore.
So there's another one that's sort of a different kind of step for you. So we're going to play this sound. This is one other thing I want to hit for you guys that you have in the program this year for Spring Pops. So the song is Florence Price's Adoration, and this is RuPaul's Drag Race star Thorgy Thor playing it last year at the Green Space for WNYC and WQXR. And you're doing a Pride Night.
We are. It's our very first, actually. It's been something that's been percolating for quite some time now. But this year we had just perfectly a concert opening on the 1st of June, first day of the month, of Pride Month. And we thought, this is the time to do it. And again, I can only credit my staff who looked around and they said, this is the person you should have. And as Thorgy is, of course, as you can imagine, a fabulous entertainer with the accent on the fabulous, and it's really all very entertaining. But this is a real musician. That's actually them playing violin.
Yep.
And she will be playing with us on stage with playing solo works with our concertmaster and all sorts of fun things like that. And it's really a great way to showcase somebody who is not just shtick. And so I'm thrilled. I'd never met this performer. I'm not a big fan of RuPaul's Drag Race. I don't watch it. So for me, it's a new adventure.
And Keith, are you 29 years in, still being stretched in new ways for you too?
I am. It's the great thing about music, and especially this kind of wide pot that we have here at the Boston Pops, is that there are infinite ways in which to be stretched, and there's always new music to learn. And that was one of the things that attracted me to being a conductor to begin with, was I'm kind of a lazy person, generally. In other words, I'm the person who always wrote a really good paper, but I didn't write it until, you know, 8 hours before it was due. And, you know, for me, it's a way to continually keep learning and have a reason to keep doing that. I will say the counterpoint to that is that it's not as easy to stretch. We all get a little tighter as yeah. life goes on. And it does become, you know, I look back at some of the schedules we did 20 years ago. I said, how did I do that many concerts?
Yeah. Keith Lockhart, Boston Pops conductor, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And a little more from Mark Martel. That's our show for today. Tune in again more tomorrow.